This is a Triple J podcast.
Hello! It's another episode of Science with Dr. Carl in your podcast feed. I'm Lucy Smith and a big Merry Christmas to you. I hope you're having an excellent festive season wherever you are. I feel like Santa today, 25th of December, and I'm dropping a gift in your podcast feed. We've wrapped up in a neat little bow some of our favourite questions from this year in the world of science. And we've gotten into a lot of interesting topics when it comes to the human body. The way your minds work clearly astounds me every single week. And it's been quite difficult actually to tuck through some of the most interesting questions we've gotten this year about photographic memories, cryogenic freezing. And of course, we've got to get some poo in there. So we've got a question about pooing schedules as well. So let's do it. Let's revisit some of the best questions this year on the human body. Sarah in Wagga Wagga, what do you want to know?
Hi, Dr. Carl. I was wondering, is it possible to train your brain to have a photographic memory?
Yes, indeedy. Uses your role model, my hero, Arnold Schwarzenegger. And if you watch some of his latest videos, you'll see that when he was a youth, he would spend 10 hours a day pumping iron. And he'd had a whole wall and he'd just write the exercise down and just go and do it over and over and over again. And I've mentioned this story before. I had a friend who had a terrible memory. They worked for an IT. They were an IT person for some big legal firm. They then trained their memory, and there are many different ways to do this. Check it out on our good friend YouTube. If some psychologists could ring in or text in on a magic number, 0439 757 555. Yep. Just give us the name of a book or something that would help. And so he got to the stage where we had him on our Sleek Geeks TV show with Adam Spencer and I and me, and every person who came in the audience, about 100 of them, went through a whole list of things that they liked or did or have. And at the end, halfway through the show, we said, okay, insert name of person, Josh, whatever your name is. Josh, who has a red car, plays tennis, and has one child? And he'd say, oh, that's Amelia, Michael, and he could do all that in his head.
Wow.
Right? And he trained for it. So you can train for it, and just think of Arnold Schwarzenegger, read his book Total Recall, or for fun, watch the video Pumping Iron. And you definitely can do it. You just train for it.
So,
with tennis, you might not be able to play tennis at all. And if you do training, you probably won't get to Wimbledon, but you'll be so much better than you are. And Arnold Schwarzenegger, 10 hours a day. Read the book Total Recall. Oh, my God, he's so good. I love him. He's my role model.
Thanks, Sarah.
Thank you. Thanks, Dr. Carl.
Rory in Melbourne, tell us what you can do.
Sure. Hey guys. I have a fun, I think, ability to smell when people are sick, and I think it's particularly the flu. And from what I understand about it, I'm smelling volatile organic compounds, but I don't know much about it, and I want to know what is the science.
Rory, does it smell like anything, or is it a completely on its own independent smell?
It's a pretty independent smell. Doesn't smell great, as I'm sure maybe you'd imagine.
I did a TikTok on this on ABC TikTok, which got a few million views. And it was about a woman who had a really good sense of smell, and she loved this guy and he smelled nice, and she married him and they had babies. And then one day she said, "You smell bad." And he said, "Okay." And he tried different things and he still kept on smelling bad, and they kept on going. And 14 years later, he was diagnosed from the symptoms with Parkinson's disease. They went down a pathway and then end up going to a Parkinson's disease self-help group where all these people come together. And she got out of the car and she could just smell this smell.
Wow.
She could smell Parkinson's disease. She mentioned this to the medical people. They said, "Oh, come on, you're lying." They gave her a test. They gave her 10 people, 5 with Parkinson's disease, 5 without. She got all of them right except for one, where she said, "You've got Parkinson's disease," and he hadn't. But a year later, he did. We're now working on finding out what that chemical is and have found it, and now we're trying to find ways to diagnose Parkinson's disease before the symptoms happen. When the symptoms happen, you're 14 years down the line, things are bad. If you can diagnose it early, possibly better treatment.
Has there been anything about people who can smell the flu, like Rory?
Not necessarily, but this is a whole field of knowledge that we need to explore, and maybe Australia could become a world leader in this in terms of diagnostics.
Should Dr. Rory be getting in touch with the research team and saying, "Hey, I've got this skill, do you want to study me? Do you want to put me to the test?
And you should, and quote the example of the woman who put herself through the test with regard to smelling Parkinson's disease, and from that we've found the chemical and now are getting machines for it. And there are all these anecdotes of the dogs and the cats and the nurses especially. Some of the nurses are just brilliant, and they can say, look, I'm sorry, I think you should come in because to see your mum or your dad, I don't think they'll survive much longer.
Wow.
And what they're saying is, look, I can smell it. I've smelled it before. She's going to be dead in 2 days. Get here soon. That's what they're trying to say gently.
Mm. Rory, is that something you'd be interested in?
Absolutely.
Yeah, thanks for your question.
Cool. Hey, no worries.
We got Lockie on the Central Coast. Lockie, what do you want to know?
Hey, how's it going? I just had a question about cryogenically freezing yourself. So, like, you've heard of people do it before, but, like, if I got frozen now, would I be able to wake up in 400 years, like, perfectly preserved, or?
Theoretically, yes, but nobody has ever been successfully unfrozen. The problem relates to the fact that when you have a party over Christmas and you want to get the beer cold in a hurry, you shove it in a freezer, you forget about it, and 2 hours later you hear, crack, and you open up the freezer and there is a block of ice in the shape of a bottle of beer, but all the glass is broken. And it's because water expands by 10% as it freezes. In the same way, when you freeze a human, the cells are full of water, the water expands, and each cell is full of beautiful, incredibly ornate and complicated biological machines. They're machines, but biological, including Zoe and our best friend, the mitochondria, and they get destroyed by the expanding ice. It is possible to do it, but you have to kill somebody to do it. So what you do is you have a person who is alive, and you say, we're going to freeze you now, and you start removing the water in their bloodstream in their body and replacing it with glycochemicals that do not freeze. And what that means is that on one hand, you can make them freeze and not, you can drop the temperature down and the water doesn't go solid but it turns into a mush, but you've killed the person. They were alive.
So do you reckon modern medicine will evolve enough to like be able to like put water back in their body and preserve them?
Well, Zoe and I share another beloved great friend, the water bears. And you can get a water bear, what's their other name?
Tardigrade.
And you can get a tardigrade and you can take it to -271°C. And then bring it back again and it's alive. They do it. We don't have to do anything special to them. And we kind of ish know what they're doing. It's turning, they turn into a mush when they freeze, not into a solid. But 2 degrees above absolute zero.
But if you're a water bear or a tardigrade, you've spent a lot of time evolving in moss, and moss is a really extreme environment because it dries up really quickly. And so you have to be able to survive going completely dry. So they've been through millions of years of this evolutionary predicament. But also there are species that can do this. So frogs can, some species of frogs can freeze over the winter, and what they do is really increase the glucose in their organs. And so they don't fully freeze, but they're in a frozen environment. So we need to be a frog.
Yeah, cool. we need to be a frog and then it will work.
Oren in Mianjin, Brisbane here. Oren, you have a question about jump scares, but I'm going to need you to talk us through this one. What's going on?
Yeah, g'day, doctors. I hope you're both well. A bit of an odd one. I've mentioned it to a few people and no one knows what I'm talking about. When I get scared, only in real life, so not jump scares in movies or TV shows or anything, I get a really strong metallic taste in my mouth, like I've been sucking on a coin.
Mm.
And no one knows what I'm talking about. It seems to only be me. And it's never really bothered me, but it's just something I've, been curious about.
Wow.
And I thought maybe you guys might have the answer.
So, Oren, a situation where, say, I don't know, you're walking through a house and then a friend jumps out and scares you and you get a bit of a jump scare like that, and that's where you feel that metallic taste in your mouth. Is there a sensation that goes along with that?
Oh, no, is this a word that's in the dictionary? Jump scare?
Sorry.
We'll ask the audience to come and text us in the answer on 0439 very fast jet 757555.
I think it's in the Cambridge Dictionary.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, in that case, yes.
It might be.
Okay, here's a question that might seem irrelevant, James. How's your teeth? How's your dental care?
Good.
Do you use a mechanical toothbrush or electric?
I used to use an electric. I've now moved to mechanical because I lost the charge for the electric.
You lost the charge. Okay. On one hand, when you're scared, hormones will come charging through your system. And the main ones that we know about are adrenaline and cortisol. And they will affect your production of saliva, but that's not going to affect you in the short term. But also change how you taste things. And then now back to the teeth thing. And in some people, and I learned this from my dentist, who have got almost imperceptible gum irritation. If their gums are not in perfect nick, and so when you go to the dentist, part of what they do is they get a tiny bit of a pick and they probe how deep the pocket is in the gum around each tooth. And you should be able to go down to a certain distance and no more. And at one occasion, I wasn't looking after my teeth properly, and after that I moved to an electric toothbrush on their advice, and I had to have what was called marsupialization, where they cut open most of the gums around the teeth and then let them clean out and then sew them back up again. It was really messy, but luckily it worked all right. I've still got all my teeth. But the dentists say that if you've got very mild gum irritation or inflammation, in some cases, when you get the jump scare thing, the adrenaline and the cortisol, you can release a tiny amount of blood, which tastes metallic. That's the best I got for you. That's the best I got going third hand from the dentists.
Okay. Yeah.
Thanks, Aaron.
Not a worry. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Actually getting a text on from Will in Melbourne saying, I get the metallic taste when adrenaline dumps in emergency services. Sorry, I get the metallic taste with adrenaline dumps in emergency services. So someone agreeing with you there, Oren.
Oh, at least I'm glad to know at least I'm not alone.
Yeah. Oh, it's always, real. Always on Science with Dr. Carl, you'll find someone to relate to your query. Richard in Sydney. Hey, Dr. Richard, you've noticed something.
Good morning. How are we?
Very peachy keen. Thank you.
Hi. What I'd like to know is during the week I poo fairly regularly, Monday to Friday, but on the weekend it doesn't happen. So it's kind of like I don't go until Monday again. And it's a similar thing when I'm away on holidays. It's just less regular.
Bowels are having a weekend as well, Richard.
Right. on the weekend, do you have different physical activity patterns or different sleep patterns or different eating patterns?
Not really. I have coffee every day in the morning when I wake up. Maybe it's just I'm more relaxed on the weekend because I'm not working.
Right, because normally people eat significantly differently on weekends than they do on weekdays because they have much more time. And also you've got the whole social factor where you can meet with friends and eat with them. Is that happening with you?
I'm normally pretty busy with the kids, but I don't know, mate. It's been this way for years. So Monday to Friday, I'm really busy with work, and then on the weekend, I just kind of decompress and just take it easy.
I think it might be the decompress, but what I have to do, which we can't do on air, is sit down with you and then follow what you eat on the daily weekdays and then compare with what you eat on the weekend and then plot down your activity levels, and almost certainly we'd find a correlation there.
And also the times maybe. Yeah. Maybe you're a little more relaxed, so you're not having lunch as early as you would in the day. Interesting.
On the other hand, if the kids are very young, then you are actually working harder than you do at the office. And people say, oh, please let me go to the office where I can have a bludge as opposed to looking after the kids, which is so much hard work.
That's true. Maybe you're working so hard you don't have time, Richard.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a weird one. It's my partner was the one that's encouraged me to call. I'll unpack it.
Okay, Richard, here's your homework. We need you to take a food and bowel activity habit and then send it in via email to us here at Triple J.
For that as well.
There's apps.
Yeah, you can log everything, the time, the amount of poo, what it was shaped like, what it looked like.
Okay, it's time for a deeper analysis, as Lucy said. Go in there, do the app, and then send us the data, and you might be in rain running for a Triple J pencil.
Okay.
Do pencils exist anymore?
like a colour pencil or a lead pencil?
Lead pencil, which is actually graphite. I mean, do they exist? Do people use them?
Sure, yeah, for sure.
Okay, just check.
I don't know if we have Triple J ones. I don't know if you're giving away some bespoke Dr. Carl ones. Hey, Hannah in Meant in Brisbane. I like this question. Paint a picture. What do you want to know?
Hi, doctors. I just wanted to know if 1,000 of the best swimming athletes in the world swim in the ocean for like 90% of the day, every single day for generations, and reproduce together, would they somehow evolve to develop webbed feet, scaly skin and gills, sort of like a sea creature?
That's such a great question. And this is actually the premise of there was a book that I think it was Neal Stephenson wrote, Seven Eves, and that's actually kind of posits that in, you know, that there are groups of humans that do actually evolve to live in aquatic or marine environments. So that amount of evolution, in terms of kind of evolving from sort of just muscles and maybe webbed, you know, webbed fingers and things, that stuff in some ways from an evolutionary perspective is a little simpler. Gills is going to be the challenging one because gills requires a massive reorganization of a fairly kind of fundamental part of our physiology. So it's, I mean, gills, the kind of interface between the water and the lung surface or the gill surface, when you're breathing air, the oxygen is at a very different concentration and it's also in a different pressure to what to what fish get exposed to in terms of the oxygen content in water. And so for us to adapt to that kind of environment would be really challenging. It's kind of funny because evolution, so much of evolution is kind of accident. It's a mutation that creates something that is beneficial in a particular environment, and then that mutation then allows that the organism that's got that mutation to survive and to go on to reproduce. So it may well be over the course of, you know, we're talking millions of years here, that humans may well evolve that, but we'd have to be under such strong evolutionary pressure to do that, where it would literally be a matter of whether or survival or not. So in an environment where you've just got kind of, you know, great swimmers going and having a swim every day, they can still get out of the water, they can still breathe air, they can still, there's no evolutionary pressure on their bodies to evolve something as drastic as gills. If we had a flooded, and this is, isn't this the premise of Waterworld as well? Like I'm thinking this
I think,
is,
yeah, if, you know, the earth, or the land sank underwater.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure Kevin Costner probably played around with this idea. So it's not beyond the realms of possibility because obviously, you know, fish, we all evolved from a common ancestor. Fish went the way of gills, we went the way of lungs. But there are creatures that, you know, that live in between those two worlds, like amphibians and kind of creatures like mudskippers. But there has to be an evolutionary pressure to select for that. And just going swimming when you can still breathe air is not enough of it's not really any evolutionary pressure to do that. So possible, but not really at this junction. I mean, you know, ask us again in 2,000 years mm-hmm. if, you know, the entire surface of the planet is underwater, who knows?
We're doing it underwater.
50 years.
Yeah. Hannah, does that help?
Yeah, definitely. Exciting, hopefully.
I also like the premise of the best swimmers getting thrown in. So you got Ian Thorpe, Michael Klim, Emma McKeon, you know, just this super race. Thanks, Hannah. We've got Ruby in Sydney. Dr. Ruby, what's your question?
Hi. So I am blind and I just wondered how they could make a bionic eye with my condition. So my retinas don't work at all. They're destroyed, but my optic nerve still works. So how could that happen with the bionic eye?
And has it been this way since birth or did it happen during
no.
life?
No. So I had like leukemia and I had a brain bleed which made my retinas basically, destroyed.
And
so.
How do you recover from the leukemia?
That was fine. It's just the blindness is left over. So okay. I had full sight before that.
Okay, so there's three parts of your body
that
are incredibly blood dependent to survive, and that is the heart muscle and the mm-hmm. brain, and by extension the retina, which is part of that. So all you need is a short-term interruption to the blood mm-hmm. supply, and then the retina dies. Bit of anatomy here: the eye, about 24 millimeters in diameter when you're an adult, and the retina is a layer 1/3 of a millimeter thick that turns light into electricity. Now, here's the weird thing. You have cells in your fingertips and in your brain and in your muscles and in your liver, spleen, that have the DNA for growing another retina.
The first time we were able to actually induce that properly was in 2021 in October, where we had a human male who had had an infection and as a result couldn't make insulin, and we modified their DNA to be able to make insulin again. All the information needed to give you a functioning retina is there in other cells in your body and almost certainly in the cells around your eyeball. But we do not have the technology yet to make them grow a new retina for you. We did do it with this guy who, and by the way, when I say for this guy, the technology was 20 scientists, 20 years, and $50 million. And so almost certainly there are people working on this to give you a biological implant, which is far superior. There have also been working on electrical implants. And so you have a camera pointed to the outside world. It picks up the world. It generates an electrical signal. You then feed that into the visual cortex of your brain, and it has to be decoded. And then you've got the problem with getting it across into the brain, because if you've got wires, then bacteria can run in those wires into your brain and give you infections. So we're working on, people are working on ways both electronic and biological, and I think we'll both of them will be coming, and I just hope they hurry up, and for you especially, Ruby. There is hope on the horizon. The first time I read of this was in 1977, and I remember sitting in an operating theatre with a patient. We were pouring artery stuff into their heart arteries, and there was the front cover of Nature magazine, and I looked at it and I thought, what the hell is that? And it was an x-ray of a human skull with a socket, you know, like a socket the size of a golf ball stuck in the back of the guy's head. And a guy had accidentally been hit by a shotgun blast to the face. And what they had done was wired a camera, a primitive camera back in 1977, into his visual cortex. And the plug, like, I mean, it was the size of a golf ball. And he had a grid of vision that was about 8x8. Not millions by millions, but 8x8. And that was the first step way back then.
Yeah.
I wish I could... There's something coming. I wish I could say it's available tomorrow. But there is something coming, so be brave.
Thank you.
And by the way, do you still dream in shapes? Do you still see shapes in your dreams?
Yeah, I still see in my dreams. And I even, like, when I think, I still see in my head, which is quite strange. But
and have your other senses become more heightened to compensate for the lack of vision?
Yeah, definitely hearing and my, like, feeling things. I'm much more sensitive.
Wow. Are you one of those people who can make little clicking noises and navigate around the world by the echoes?
Yeah, I can hear doors and walls and things like that. So,
Mate, we need you as a audio producer in the ABC to bring the standard up.
Ruby, thank you so much, and thanks for telling your story as well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Georgia in Townsville, what's your question?
Hi. So I have a question about a cognitive phenomenon, aphantasia. So I personally have it. I can't visualize anything, like, visually in my mind. I just want to know what the process for that is, if you know it, and you can help me out figuring that out.
Okay, so, Lucy, if I say, imagine you're on a Pacific island and you're lying on the beach and all you can see is your feet in front of you and the yellow sand and the blue ocean and a different color, shade of blue in the sky, you can kind of visualize that?
Mm-hmm.
Ah, can you visualize it, Georgia?
I can only barely see black and white shadow or outlines.
Right.
Not even.
So people with aphantasia, they can't generate the visual images. And this was first noted by a relative of Charles Darwin about a century ago, who then asked all of his mates at Oxford or Cambridge University, and that most of them seemed to have it, so he thought that everybody had it, and then he started running across people who could visualize images, and he thought they were the abnormal ones. Okay, both are normal. So what we have found by doing MRI scans is we say to people, Georgia, hop in this MRI machine. Now, think about the scene that I described. We get Lucy to think about the scene that I described while she's in an MRI machine. Lucy and I will both have heaps of visual activity, electrical activity, in the visual cortex, and you'll have bugger all. Why that happens, we don't know. But that means that once you know you've got it, you can then live your life to use that in a way that's best optimized. You know, there's that old saying, play to your strengths. So don't try to use visualization as a memory aid or learning, but find other pathways. There's websites on this. Did you find that it interferes with your life much? And when did you first discover you had it?
So funny enough, I'm an artist. It was pretty easy for me to figure out. So I always need to use referencing. I always need to have all this extra stuff. It helps being a tattoo artist. Having the references is always important.
Wow.
But having the visualization of it, when someone's like, hey, can you visualize this character for me or this concept? And I'm like, oh, actually, I can't. And I was talking to another artist friend. He's like, oh, yeah, that's Avantasia.
Now, look, I wouldn't worry about it being an artist because one of my mates is a very moderately famous artist, and only recently did we discover that person is colorblind.
Wow.
And they've been painting great paintings for a long time. So go with the strength. Play to your strengths on this one.
Definitely do that, because mentally for audio stuff, I'm really good, but visually not so much.
Wow. Georgia, thank you so much for sharing.
Thank you.
We got Michael in Melbourne. Michael, I love this. What do you want to know?
Hey, doctors. The new Halsey album, or latest one, has a song called The Arsonist, and there's a line in the song that says, the father's DNA stays in the mother for 7 years. And I was just wondering how accurate that was.
I love it. I love it when we fact-check a movie, fact-check song lyrics. Bianca, is that true?
It is a great question. No. I think it's probably the shortest answer. So if we're talking very specifically, so let's say the father's DNA is sperm, that's not going to survive particularly long. I'm not actually sure how long sperm cells survive, but I mean, the female anatomy, reproductive anatomy, is not designed to hang on to this stuff. Unlike some other animals, bees, for example, like queen bees will store the sperm. They go out on one mating flight, they mate with as many male drones as they can, and they store that sperm for their lifetime, and they use it to constantly fertilize eggs. Humans, thankfully, do not do that. The sperm is there, does its job or doesn't do its job, depending on what the situation is. And then, I don't know, how long does it last, you reckon?
5 days.
5 days. Mm-hmm. So if we're talking in specifics in terms of that DNA, no, definitely not there for 7 years. The other way that we were thinking about it might influence, so, if there's a baby that's conceived, that baby does have a long-lasting impact on the maternal, a lot of it impacts the immune system, whether or not, when a baby is born, pretty much all of the DNA, you would say, the genetic material that is associated with that baby is ultimately removed or it's got, I want to say gotten rid of, that's not the right term, but it is, why don't we say this, expelled, there we go, we'll go with expelled. Yeah. All of that genetic material associated with the baby is expelled from the mother's body at birth. So there's not really anything that hangs around there. I mean, you could conceivably argue there's maybe longer term effects on the maternal immune system because, your immune system is altered by having a baby because you do have essentially what is a parasite growing within you, and that's going to have some long term effects on your immune system. But in terms of that song line, no, it's not right.
Halsey, come on. But you know what? It is, I think, it has power, It's art. I feel like we could have made two episodes alone on the human body, but that is it. Some of our favourite questions that you've asked this year about your bods. And we're going to be dropping a few of these in your feed over summer. So make sure you are liked, subscribed, so you're the first to know when those episodes drop. And also mark your calendar, because in the new year, Thursday, January 15, Science with Dr. Carl will be back for 2026. So if you want to submit a question for our debut episode in the new year, make sure you're ready to go. We do it every Thursday, 11 a.m. Australian Eastern Daylight Time, and start taking questions from about 9 a.m. Australian Eastern Daylight Time on 0439 757 555. I'm Lucy Smith. I hope you're having an excellent holiday season. This episode was produced by Josh Brennan, and we'll catch you next week. Bye.
Dave Marchese here from the Triple J Hack team. Hey, if you love Dr. Carl's podcast like I do, you might enjoy the Hack podcast as well. Each day, we bring you the news that matters to you, from the latest science on climate change to what's happening in politics and news around the world. The Hack Podcast. It's your daily fix of the news you need to know. Get it wherever you're listening now.